you know, the late night hosts are back on the telly. Now that the Hollywood writer's strike is over, America went 4 months with no Kimmel or Fallon, Oliver or Colbert.
It's been a long time since our last late show. We looked at the calendar today and checked my math on this. I believe we have been off the air for 154 indictments.
The question is, does their political satire serve an important role in society, in democracy, kind of like the court jester speaking a certain truth? Sophia McLennan is professor of international affairs at Penn State, and her latest book is Trump Was a Joke: How Satire Made Sense of a President Who Didn't. Sophia McLennan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You write about satire, which is meant to have a point, to expose something about society. And can this kind of late-night humor, this kind of satire, reveal realities that others, say journalists, cannot?
Yes, that's absolutely what we see happening. And part of it is that it gets very difficult for the traditional news media to cover stories that are absurd in a straight way, whereas the comedians are able to zero in on the absurdity and sort of draw it out and make jokes about it while also revealing truths to the complexity. So one way to think of it is we do have a front runner in the GOP who is under indictment. That is simply absurd. It's extremely difficult for the news to point out how, you know, head-scratching that is, whereas the comedians can do that really effectively. Comedians can, for example, avoid one of the pitfalls that we saw in the mainstream news media, where it seemed important to offer many sides to a story, both sides to a story. Whereas the comedians can say, I'm going to go specifically after this element here that seems ludicrous, ridiculous, funny, odd, strange. Their mission is to call out follies, absurdity, things that don't make sense but are accepted in the status quo. And so they can zero in on that, and that can happen whether they're observing it on the left or the right.
Historically, we know there are cases of satire to poke at dictators, brutal authoritarian governments. Charlie Chaplin would mock Hitler, you know, as a child playing around with a balloon that looks like a globe. Can this help an audience process what they're going through, even if what they're going through is a horrific reality?
Well, that's really the perfect question, because those of us who like to study satire know that satire emerges in force in moments of crisis. And when you, for example, have limited avenues of expression, you see satire emerge. And one of the reasons why is because it is officially unserious speech. So people can make these jokes and then say, well, I was just kidding. I wasn't serious. So that's why you'll see it happening, for example, under autocrats, dictators, and other kinds of, you know, again, censored media spaces. So that's one piece of it. But the other is that it's simply stressful to live in a world where the messages you're getting don't line up with your experience of reality. And so having that combination of playfulness and humor with information and a framing of the issues that's helpful, that combo is super powerful.
In your book, you argue that satirical humor can actually encourage people to do things, say voters to go to the polls, and that there is data for this. I guess I want to ask you about the other hand, the argument that, you know what, this humor, as the argument goes, can distract so that we don't take things seriously, that it can lead to inaction. Malcolm Gladwell has made this argument. Is that a possibility too?
Well, with all due respect to Malcolm Gladwell, the research just doesn't back up that speculation. That satire would lead to, say, a distraction that would keep people from being politically active. We know that the viewers of satire, consumers of satire, are simply more politically active. There are other risks, though, and they're important ones. We know that satire can exacerbate political polarization. And so that's not a small consequence and a small potentially negative one. We also know that other kinds of humor that are not what we would call satire, but just mocking humor, humor where you just sort of cut politicians down a peg, maybe say Trump has weird hair and Joe Biden likes muscle cars, and all of that can, in fact, depress voter turnout, depress sort of voters paying attention to issues. So that kind of comedy, in fact, can play a fairly negative role in getting people involved.
Okay. And I want to play something from Jimmy Kimmel talking about ex-President Donald Trump, Trump responding to the late night jokes about him. Let's take a listen.
This is really something a very loyal viewer, somebody that really watches the show a lot and takes it in, at 1:05 in the morning last night, 1:05 a.m., posted the following thought. He wrote, "Now that the strike is over, the talentless, low-rated creeps of late-night television are back. I knew there was a reason I didn't want to see it settled. True losers." Well, I love that with everything he's got going on, running for president, 91 felony charges, a $250 million fraud trial, he still finds time to watch his favorite late night shows and tantrum about them.
I want to ask you about this increase in satire in the U.S. Does it potentially indicate something challenging, indicate trouble in our democracy?
I think the important thing to note is that the trouble existed first. So the way to think of this is that, similar to what I said, that satire comes out of crisis. And that's why the satirists emerge as starting to become a stronger and stronger force for informing the public. The satire viewer scores higher than cable news viewers in their knowledge of facts relevant to current events. And it isn't that the satire itself is the sign of the problem. It's that there were already problems in terms of how the public was getting informed, and the satire jumps in and starts to fill a gap.
Of course, the late night guys are going after President Biden, too. That's their job. Stephen Colbert the other day referenced Joe Biden's nap time when talking about a national test of the emergency alert system.
These tests are evidently necessary, but some on social media were not too pleased, like one conservative journalist who complained that it happened right during the baby's nap time. Thanks, Biden. Hey, you think Biden's happy? It was right during his nap time, too.
Comedians will often say, you know, my job is to just to crack jokes, to be humorous, not to be serious. Can their satire still kind of galvanize people to think about their situation in a serious way, galvanize people to do something, even if it's kind of unintended?
Well, I like to say that the last person you want to ask about the outcomes of their satire are the satirists. You know, that's my job, because their job, you know, what they're doing on the creative end is really their focus. Obviously, they want to keep their audiences engaged, but they don't necessarily think three steps ahead.
Yeah. And when you make the point in your book that satire can boost political activism, political action, how does that work?
Yeah, one of the things that's really exciting to note is that when people consume political satire, they feel more confident that they understand the issue. They understand the complexities and nuances, and confidence is highly correlated to action. So when you're watching, say, a particular news item and you start feeling stressed out and depressed, you may not mobilize. The satirists seem to be extremely good at helping their audience not just understand an issue, but feel confident about that understanding. So that's one of those transition points. The other thing that's exciting to see is what satire does to your brain. This is the research that I think is sort of the most fun. And what satire does is blend pleasure centers in the brain with the highest cognitive functioning. So when you do that, right, you're getting people happy, not depressed. And when people are, you know, in a better mood, more positive, more forward thinking, we see more political action.
Sophia McLennan is professor of international affairs and comparative literature at Penn State University. Sophia, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.